After years of turmoil, the Himalayan Kingdom of Nepal is starting to become more stable. Last month, the King of Nepal gave up his absolute power and restored democracy after weeks of mass protests. Yesterday, the newly established government and Nepal's powerful Maoist rebels agreed to enter peace talks. The Maoist insurgency is considered a terrorist movement by the U.S. government, and it is unusual not just for its Maoist ideology, but also for the number of women in its ranks. Reporter Dwali Saikautau recently met with the Maoist top woman leader, and she sent this report.
A green three-wheeled taxi known as a tuk-tuk takes me through the streets of New Delhi to meet with the most senior woman in Nepal's Maoist insurgency. She is in hiding here in the Indian capital, making clandestine trips to Nepal. By prior arrangement, I meet a Maoist sympathizer at a bus stop. We take another tuk-tuk to a nondescript building. Up three flights of stairs and in a dark room, a woman in her late 40s sits next to a small window. She smiles politely.
I'm Parvati. P-A-R-V-A-T-I. Parvati.
Hisala Yami is her actual name, but she wants to be known only as Comrade Parvati. Her husband is Dr. Babram Batrai, the number two Maoist leader in Nepal under Supreme Commander Prachanda. Parvati is from an upper-middle-class family and was educated as an architect in one of New Delhi's top institutions.
I did my schooling in IIT Kanpur. People there were very much more cultured and very educated. So every time I went back to my country, I found that people were very backward, especially the women, you know, they were not educated. And that forced me to think about my own country.
In 1978, she began to read feminist writers such as Rosa Luxemburg, Evelyn Reed and Clara Zetkin, as well as Indian feminist journals such as Manushi. Her daughter is also named Manushi. Parvati sees her 20-year-old daughter only about once a year. It's been quite some time since she's seen her husband as well.
Just a year back, you know, both of us were being put into disciplinary action by the party. So, I mean, that time I really had a good discussion with him and we read a lot of books together and it really enriched, I think, our not only knowledge but our relations also.
Comrade Parvati says communism is not obsolete. She says it makes sense in the 21st century.
See, one thing, you coming from America, I feel really sad, you know, that when you hear the word communist, you see someone as really war ravagers and, you know, someone who's, you know, sucking the blood and all that. Let's come down to the basic word communist. What is communist? It's something to do with the community. You become a full person only when the whole society becomes fully blown and it's in a position to eat and think freely. You don't become individually free when you have maximum number of people tied down by poverty, tied down by not having access to democracy.
Back in Nepal, poverty is a way of life for most of its 27 million people. Much of the countryside still lacks electricity or running water. In this village, children and animals gather at the same water pump. Nepal's economy is growing at a mere 2% per year. The tallest mountain in the world, Mount Everest, attracts fewer tourists than it used to. The decade-long conflict in Nepal has killed more than 13,000 people so far. Maoist women combatants are among the dead. Insurgents, both men and women, are training side by side in western Nepal. 25-year-old Samjana is a battalion vice commander in Nepal's PLA, or People's Liberation Army. More than 450 soldiers are under her command. As they train, Commander Samjana looks on. Through an interpreter, she explains why she joined the PLA at age 18.
There's a lot of discrimination existing in our present society. She actually joined the People's Liberation Army because, in order to liberate women, to fight for equal rights.
Samjana says she is not afraid to die for the Maoist cause.
My party has this system where when a person dies in war, we declare them as martyrs. Those martyrs are remembered as very great and very immortal ones. I would like to be the same.
This sentiment is shared by many women insurgents. The Maoists claim that 30 to 50% of their members are women. Some are on the front line of the conflict. Others remain in the hills as community workers and teachers. In her secret location in New Delhi, Maoist leader Parvati says joining the party liberates women because it breaks the shackles of their day-to-day kitchen work.
To be sensitive to women's issue is actually to be sensitive towards the poor people, towards the oppressed ethnic groups, towards the oppressed religious groups. So it is a mother of all the oppression. If you address that correctly, you actually address not only your society's problem, not only your country's problem, but the world's problems.
Brigadier General Nepal Bhushan Chan doesn't buy this talk. He's the director of public relations for the Royal Nepalese Army in Kathmandu.
Terrorists are terrorists everywhere on earth. They make snap surprise attacks, and they have also adopted a lot of small children from schools, and their forces has become a little bit bigger, and now they are a force in combat with the security forces, even with the Royal Nepalese Army, and that is the situation right now.
According to INSEC, a human rights group in Kathmandu, Maoist abducted more than 46,000 people from 1996 to 2005. Most were released after attending Maoist programs, but some, including children, stay with the insurgents, says Maoist leader Parvati.
Children, they are in fact coming to our party to help us. And then we give them all kinds of air-handling jobs, okay? All right? And they are not part of the PLA force. We put them in a village defense committee, whereby their job is to see if, you know, the enemy is coming or not. We try our best not to give the combat kind of a job because it's not fit. Their maturity does not allow that.
Ian Martin heads the UN's Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights in Nepal. He says the ongoing conflict has been marked by very serious human rights violations by both the state and the Maoist. Since May of 2005, Martin's office has received nearly 300 reports of disappearances.
When we talk about the disappeared, we're not talking about someone who just vanished. We're talking about someone who is known to have been taken into state custody, usually into army barracks, and then disappeared.
The Nepalese people fear death by both the Maoist and the Nepalese army. Maoist leader Comrade Parvati says killing is necessary in war.
If a person in a village is going out of his way to become the agent of the government, okay, agent of the RNA, then we abduct such a person, give him warning. We give him enough warning, and if that doesn't go, we even kill them.
She asks Americans to understand the reality of Nepal's conflict. We are not terrorists, she says.
We are fighting for our survival. And we feel that unless we address the key issue, and that key political issue is the monarchy, is the medieval monarchy which is still existing in this country, that we are against.
With that, Comrade Parvati ends the interview. Asked if she can be photographed, she refuses. But after several more requests, she agrees to one photo, but only in profile, in the darkened room. For NPR News, I'm Dwahli Saikautel.
You can see that photo and an audio slideshow about the impact the conflict has had on Nepal's women and children at npr.org. Dwahli Saikautel traveled to Nepal and India as a fellow in the International Reporting Project at Johns Hopkins University. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.